Good morning, everyone. I am here at Beach Lane on this sunny Saturday with Radio Carrum and one of our Beach Lane practitioners, Tim Mitchell, for our Beach Lane Presents this morning. So welcome, Tim.
Thanks, Nicola.
Great to have you along. Tim's done a small podcast in the past when we were promoting the Friday Family Forum. So I've welcomed Tim back today to have a chat to us a little bit more in detail about what he is bringing to Beach Lane. So first of all, this morning, Tim, can you tell our listeners what it is that brought you to Beach Lane?
I'd love to. Yeah. Well, I've just returned to this area, in fact, to Melbourne after running away from here in 1980, once upon a time. And I've spent the last 7 years teaching Vedic meditation and Ayurveda in Eastern Europe. In Prague I was based. And for many reasons, personal reasons, I realised it was time to come home to Melbourne, where my family, you know, my siblings and my lifelong friends are. I grew up in Aspendale, so in this area. So it's kind of like coming home, and it's a joy to find Beach Lane offering the space and the kind of environment that all the things which I've been lucky enough to learn and teach over my life, it's a nice environment for me to kind of share that.
Beautiful. And so you are a Vedic meditation teacher and an Ayurvedic practitioner. How about you share now with the listeners a little bit about what Ayurveda is and what Vedic meditation involves for those of them that maybe haven't heard of this beautiful form of practice and tradition?
Thank you very much. Well, I've been fortunate. I learnt this technique, Vedic meditation, when I was just 18. As I said, that's once upon a time. I'm 63 and a half now. And I've been practicing it all my life, and I've been a teacher of it full-time since 2005 when I graduated in India with my teacher, Tom Knowles. Vedic meditation comes from a tradition in North India that's maintained the purity of its teaching going back for thousands of years. From my point of view anyway, it's a very, very pure form of meditation that's quite unique in that it's specifically designed for householders. Householders are people like ourselves who are engaged in life. It's not a technique to be practiced by a reclusive, a monk, or something like that. And this is quite unique in its approach. So it doesn't make us withdraw from life. The results of the practice allow us to engage in life more fully. And isn't that what we really want to do? We want to engage in life more richly, more fully. If we've got any kind of inkling towards these kinds of subjects, and the offerings that we have at Beach Lane here, it's usually that, isn't it? That we want to experience life in a deeper way. We know there's something more there. And it's actually very simple. The technique of Vedic meditation is, when it's correctly instructed, very simple, easy to learn. In fact, another unique thing about it is I, as the teacher, one of the first things I say to you if you join the course is, I'm completely responsible for you learning. It's my job to teach you. You don't have to get it. It's not another skill. Another unique thing about it is it really is a process, which I think truly is what meditation should be. Everything else we do in life is a skill, something which the more we do it, the better we get at it. Meditation is not like that when it's correctly instructed. It's an easy, effortless process that allows the mind to quieten down. In a very natural, easy way. And the benefits of it, and this is sometimes a bit of a surprise, the real benefits of meditation, at least initially, are not from the mental experience, although in Vedic meditation it's very, very pleasant, calm, sweet experience, sitting comfortably in a chair, anywhere at all, even on the metro or the train. Sitting comfortably anywhere, it's a very pleasant experience, but the benefits we get is from the mind-body correlation. When the mind quietens down, you know, the body quietens down. And scientific research into Vedic meditation and a similar technique show that it delivers a state of rest that's two or more times deeper than our deepest night's sleep. Now, this is, you know, really impressive because we think, well, isn't sleep our deepest form of rest? There's a couple of reasons why that's not true. The It's very interesting. When we're asleep, the body's actually got a different agenda. It stopped fulfilling all our relentless ambitions of our eyes open state of the day. When the mind goes to sleep, the body goes, okay, look, I've got this stuff to do. You know, I've got repair and maintenance. I've got to sweep the streets and take away the garbage. I've got to deliver all the nutrition, the loaves of bread that you've baked all day, given me all day. I've got to deliver it out to all of the different cells. So this is what the body does when we're asleep. All this keeps the metabolism up. It's a busy time for the body. Not as busy as when it's fulfilling our relentless ambitions, but it's a busy time. Also, when we're asleep, nobody's home. It means the body's lost contact of the outside world, which means there's a potential for danger. You know, the lion could come into the cave, and no one's going to warn it when we're asleep. And so, again, it keeps its metabolism up a little bit, not at its deeper state of rest, in case there's a call to action. It's a very interesting psychological point of view. When we're meditating, this Vedic meditation is, we don't lose contact with our surroundings. We could meditate here, as I often have in cafes, such as Beach Lane, where we are at the moment. And noise is no barrier to meditation, it's just a part of it. But still, the mind can quieten down using the technique and experience this deep state of rest. Because it's very simple. Sometimes we think too much. In fact, most of the time we think too much about life instead of enjoying life, instead of getting into life. And a formula for a good life is actually very simple. Profound rest followed by satisfying activity. It's a simple formula, isn't it? Profound rest, which meditation gives. Along with sleep, we still got to sleep. We can't just meditate because the body's still got to deliver all the bread and sweep the roads and take away the garbage, which it does during sleep. During meditation, we're still aware of our surroundings, but because we're in a state of such deep relaxation and contentment, the mind doesn't have to plan anything. It can know if there's a lion around. If there's a lion around, thank you. We will notice and I'll be able to bring the metabolism up and can respond. So in this way, when the mind quietens down, the body can go, oh, nice. For a little while, it doesn't have to do anything and it can reach its deeper state or least excited state of relaxation, because when the mind is in its least excited state, the body is also in its least excited state. This is very, very interesting. But so why does it work? This is a good question. Because my short answer, you know, what's unique about Vedic meditation, my cheeky answer is I say, well, Vedic meditation works. Apart from being a little bit cheeky, because I think what I teach is very unique and profound, what I mean by that, the deeper meaning of that is the technique works. The student doesn't have to make it work. It's not another skill. And it works by a very, I think, profound, interesting way of understanding the mind. Our mind is too often portrayed in spiritual circles as well as eyes open circles as being this troublesome monkey, you know, that's running around erratically and can't be controlled. If something moves around, if anything moves in the universe, it's because what it wants isn't where it is. True?
Very true.
Very simple. So why is the mind always moving? It is like a monkey. It's looking for something. Now, if I want to keep that monkey to be still, like a real monkey, I can try to chase it and learn to throw lassos and tie knots and catch it and pull it on a rope with lots of time and effort and skill. And maybe I can pull it on a very short rope and hold it still. This is mental control. It may work with a lot of effort, but I ask one question. Is anything that's on a leash, like a dog, anything that's under control, is it at ease? And the answer is it's not. Any form of control cannot deliver ease. It's very simple to understand that. But if I want to find out what is the monkey running around for, that'll give me more intelligent approach. You know, a monkey's running around looking for a banana, right? That's what he's running around for. So if I get a banana and put it down where I'd like him to be still, by his own nature, he's going to cautiously come over towards the banana, and then he'll sit and eat the banana, and for a little while he'll be completely at ease. He's found what he's looking for. So in the same way, the monkey mind can be quietened down in the same effortless way if we ask, what does the mind want? Why do we think? It's a really good question that doesn't get asked. Why do we think? Why does this incredible bit of architecture, the most fantastic kind of bit of technology in the environment that we know of, our body, why does it think? It's looking for something, like the monkey. What's it looking for? It's a really good question. What's the end result of every single thought that we've ever had? We're looking for happiness. We're looking for joy. We're looking for charm. I'm cautious of the word happy because of what the Americans, forgive me, anyone listening, you know, we've been told that happiness is getting what we want. And that's not true. If that is true, we'll never be happy all of the time. So I'm careful of the word happiness. But the mind is looking for charm. It wants to experience feeling at ease. And the mind will naturally move towards something that's more charming without any effort. We were talking politics here, and your favourite song, Nicola, played on the car radio that went past the cafe. Where would the mind be? On the song. Effortlessly. You didn't have to concentrate, didn't have to contemplate, didn't have to imagine what the song would be like over there. The mind moves there. So how Vedic meditation works so effortlessly and easily is my training as a Vedic meditation teacher is that I choose a sound. We call these sounds mantras. A sound that has a natural resonance with the individual. Part of the first session of Vedic meditation is always done privately, individually, as I choose that sound that's got a natural resonance. Resonance, and the mind hears this sound and goes, nice, the smell of the banana, nice. It's a meaningless sound. And so the mind's a bit tricked because the mind's used to having a thought and thinking about the meaning of that thought and having another thought about the meaning of that thought. And so the mind moves along in a horizontal way. We give it a different sort of thought, this sound that's got a resonance. And the mind goes, nice, but what can I do with it? I can't think anything about it, so all I can do is think it again. And it's charming. Now, the quality of these sounds, these particular mantras that I'm trained to use in the Shankaracharya tradition, is these sounds naturally disappear. That's their quality. You know, the masters of the Vedas, you know, the ancient knowledge of the world, in particular India, is they were masters of the environment and masters of sound. And they found certain sounds had a resonance with the individual, and the qualities of these particular sounds was that they disappeared. They got more refined. Now, as the mind experiences more refined aspects of the mantra, it becomes more charming. It goes into what I call the daydream state. Now, daydream's really nice, isn't it? Yes. But it's not the content of a daydream that's interesting. It's actually the way that we're thinking. Because often if someone disturbs you, your partner disturbs you from a daydream at breakfast, you kind of feel a bit annoyed because you are kind of enjoying something, and he might say, well, what were you thinking about, instead of listening to my boring conversation that I always have at breakfast. And you kind of go, well, I don't know what I was thinking. The content wasn't relevant. It was the way that I was thinking. You were moving into a more meditative state. So, which means the charm of thinking increases. So these mantras, as we effortlessly think them in a very particular way that I teach you to do, is these mantras get quieter and quieter and quieter until after a little while it disappears completely. And just for a moment in a new meditator, the mind's left in a state of no thought, no mantra. An innocent state of pure awareness. It's aware of the surroundings, but it feels so at ease, it doesn't have to think anything about it. And the mind usually starts going, ha-ha, this is it. This is what Timbo spoke about. Now he's thinking again. And that's okay. Thoughts are a part of meditation. I won't be instructing you not to think. I just train you, when we find the mind's off the mantra, how to effortlessly come back to this orientating sound, and we dive and dive again. And so after 20 minutes, the physiology, because of this quiet state of the mind, experiences a state of rest equivalent but different to 2 to 3 hours sleep. So what are the benefits of meditation? I mean, I could talk for hours about what the benefits may be, but we can all inquire, what would it be like if I woke up in the morning really, really refreshed? Now, we've all had that experience, I hope, sometime in our life. Unfortunately, it gets rarer these days. But when we wake up in the morning after we're really, really refreshed, you know, the aggravating boss at work is the same. You know, the traffic, Melbourne traffic, is the same. All of our challenges, you know, that we call stresses, our irritations in our life are the same, but we interact with them in a better way. Isn't it true? So the key, you know, what Vedic meditation delivers, as you'll see on my website, vedicmeditation.eu, EU for Europe, because I've just returned from there, what you'll see is my simple description of Vedic meditation is reliable access to profound rest. It's a lot more than that. You know, we gain a great benefit by learning to appreciate those quiet layers of the mind as well. And I can talk more about that if you come to my introductory talk, which I'll give you the dates for later. But the immediate benefits we get is from that profound rest. And all our health gets better, you know, blood pressure lowers, you know, heart rates lower, and our relationships get better because we've got more adaptive energy, so we're not annoyed about little things. In our relationships gets better, the world around us gets better. And interestingly, some surveys have shown even that just meditating has an effect even on the people we don't know. It helps calm them down as well. It calms down the collective agitation that's in the environment. So I personally think, in a very biased way, I admit, that Vedic meditation really has got something very precious and profound to offer everyone in life. You know, whatever their station, they don't need to be spiritual. Almost everyone in the modern world is tired in some way or other, and most of our problems come from that tiredness. And Vedic meditation is a technique that allows us, through a small investment of time, both in the course itself, some financial investment, and some daily investment of 20 minutes twice a day, it offers us something that can really enrich our appreciation of our life.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for going into all of that detail to enlighten listeners a bit more on what Vedic meditation entails. I think in this raising awareness that we're seeing now in society around mindfulness and meditation, it's fascinating to hear the different styles around and know that there are different types of meditation that we can do to help, as you say, bring more stillness and increase our rest periods and, you know, try to counterbalance that busyness that we all seem to be existing in these days. So, as you mentioned, 20 minutes in the morning, 20 minutes in the evening, and it can be done anywhere, which is fantastic. I just have a couple more questions. Is Vedic meditation open to all ages? And also, what sort of time could someone expect to take to learn something like this? Obviously, we're ongoing students in our life and it's always a journey, but with everyone feeling the pressures of time and wanting to find that balance and experience these different techniques, what would the individual expect if they were to come to you to learn this style of meditation?
Great. To answer the first question is, I teach all ages, actually. I teach a special technique to children if their parents are meditating, from ages 5 years old till 10 or 12. They have an eyes open technique. Because in our tradition, we think the children are still learning to touch the world with their senses. So we don't encourage eyes closed techniques for children. And then from about 12 onwards to 87, at least in my experience, of the people that I have taught, you know, anyone within in that age group. You know, once we're old enough to know that we're thinking, you know, that's the deciding difference. Once we know that we're thinking, we've got that little bit of self-awareness present there, then we can learn to meditate. And I've taught, yeah, teenagers, you know, mothers, businessmen, spiritual people, a priest, And my eldest was an 87-year-old Indian man in South India. So, and the course itself, the first, we can learn it in four sessions of about an hour and a half each. The first session is done individually, where I perform a special ceremony called a puja in Sanskrit that acknowledges the tradition that kept this knowledge pure down through the ages, and acknowledges all of the teachers that came before me to remind me of my responsibility to teach it exactly the way that I was taught to teach it. I'm not innovating it in any way to keep it pure. This is one reason why it's so effective. And so on the first session, on the Sunday usually, I see people individually by appointments, and then however many people I initiate. To initiate means to begin, you know, it's not a mysterious term. On the Sunday, then we all come back as a group on the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday nights for about an hour and a half each, where we meditate together, we discuss our experiences. I refine, you know, your practice of the technique. On the second night following the initiation, we gain a wonderful intellectual understanding of the whole process of meditation and why we have the experiences that we do. Because our intellectual understanding is really important, you know, after we've gained some experience. And then by the third night or the fourth day of the course, you've had enough experience meditating at home in your own environment and bringing the questions back to me, like, what do I do if the dog licks my face and if my baby cries, etc., etc. We answer all of those practical questions. So by that fourth day, you're a completely independent meditator who's got the capacity, as many do, to maintain this as a practice for the rest of your life. No other follow-up is needed. However, I make a lifetime guarantee to your 20 minutes, meaning at any time in the future that you have some problem with meditation itself, you can contact me by the various means that we've got these days, and we can sort it out either by email, by Skype, or coming and, you know, coming to one of my follow-up group meditations, etc., etc. So as the technique lasts for a lifetime, I also offer, it's the last thing left in the world with a lifetime guarantee. So it's a relatively small investment of time, four sessions of an hour and a half. Mm. And, you know, many meditators, like I never saw my teacher again when I learnt in 1972 in Parkdale from a Mrs. Mabs Honey. I never saw her or any other teachers for years afterwards. And yet I maintained my practice, a bit irregular because I was young. But it really gives independence. It's a technique that we can get. And whatever our spiritual background is, it doesn't interfere with any. It's not a belief system. I've taught people from all religions. You don't have to believe it to work. In fact, it's better if you don't have a belief. I teach a cynic easier than a believer. Because in some ways they're more innocent.
Okay. Thank you for sharing that. Now, if the listeners are interested in finding out some more, where can they find you, and when are you going to be hopefully offering some of your sessions here at Beach Lane?
Great. Well, you can often find me in the cafe. Look up my picture on my website, and if you see me in Beach Lane, when you're in having one of their wonderful coffees here, come up and say hello. But I'm going to give a public introductory talk here at Beach Lane on Thursday night, the 24th of August, from 6:30 until 8, about an hour and a half. We will go more deeply into these points that I've touched upon. And I'll be offering a course at the end of the month going from the 27th till the 30th of August, those four sessions which I've just described. The details of that are on my website, which is Vedic Meditation, V-E-D-I-C, meditation, all one word, .eu. If you forget that, you'll also find me if you look at meditationwithtim.com, very easy to remember. That will redivert to this my European site. And there's a lot of information and a few other little video talks on there. So, and if that date doesn't work for you, I'm very open. You can contact me through the website, and I'm happy to meet you and give you a little private talk here in Beach Lane in the cafe at any times, you know, if I'm around, that is, you know.
Beautiful. Thank you. And we'll be sure to get that up onto the Beach Lane website as well. So if you want to check out these dates and find out how to get in contact with Tim, be sure to see www.beachlane.co. So a big thank you for joining me this morning, Tim, and enlightening the listeners a little more on Vedic meditation. If it sounds like something you're interested in, be sure to come down to Beach Lane and, we'll check out those dates at the end of the month. Thank you to Radio Karam, and everyone have a beautiful weekend.
Thanks very much, Nicola. Perhaps I'll come back another time and talk a little bit about Ayurveda. And you could have a look at my other website, yogaofthekitchen.com. And that'll give you some information about food and diet and some of the other aspects of this knowledge. And you can get something right from the website you can start using on that too. And we'll talk about that another day. Thank you very much also to Radio Karam and to you, Nicola.
Thank you, Tim. Bye-bye.